It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, a Wisconsin mayor survived COVID-19 after a long battle. We'll hear the story in a new feature from the WPR News Department. First, it's time for a regular look at the week in Washington. President Trump is calling out members of his own party who aren't supporting his attempts to overturn the results of the election, leading to friction in the White House and Congress. Last night, the president criticized the $900 billion economic relief bill recently passed by the House and Senate, saying he wants Congress to amend the bill to include $2,000 stimulus checks to individuals. Those are a couple of the stories we'll be talking about today with our guest. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of President Trump's last-minute call to rework the bill to include bigger checks and cut spending not directly related to COVID-19? Is it worth renegotiating, or should he sign it and get the assistance out to people sooner? What do you hope to see from an incoming Biden administration on future economic relief efforts and on handling the pandemic and vaccinations? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Seungmin Kim is a White House reporter for The Washington Post. Seungmin, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, I just laid out a couple stories there that are kind of old news now. We've got some newer news this afternoon. President Trump vetoed the big defense authorization bill, the thing that, among other things, pays U.S. troops. What is going on?
So this is an important bill that the Congress has successfully put together for the last six decades, and it sets all sorts of policy priorities for the Pentagon, and is considered one of the most important bills that Congress does every year. And you're right, it provides that critical military pay for the troops and so many other these military national security policies that our men and women in uniform really depend on. But the president's been signaling that he would veto this legislation for some time. First of all, this bill does have a provision that would prompt the renaming of military bases that are named after Confederate generals. That is not something that the president supports. And he also had been trying to push an unrelated provision related to Section 230 related to his broader beef against the so-called big tech companies. He was trying to put that into the bill, even though that is not an issue that the Pentagon deals with. So with the exclusion of that provision and also the inclusion of base renamings for leaders of the Confederacy, the president followed through on his threat and officially vetoed the legislation today.
What's been the response? This is still early, but what's been the response so far from Democrats and Republicans in Congress who voted a veto-proof majority in their initial vote on this to pass this thing?
So House Speaker Nancy Pelosi just released a statement on the matter, obviously decrying the veto and confirming that the House will vote to override the veto on December 28th. That is this coming Monday. And obviously, as you mentioned, there were veto-proof majorities in both the House and the Senate. You know, sometimes members of their own party don't follow through on actually overriding a veto because it is a defiant act against the sitting president. But if this were to happen, and there does seem to be enough support both among Democrats and, you know, enough Republicans to override this veto, it would be the first successful veto override of the Trump presidency. I actually went back and looked at when the first successful veto override of President Obama's time in office was, and was also in his final, the twilight months of his presidency. So it's easier to defy a president, even if he is the member of your own party, on his way out.
Well, another big shakeup here. We had, after months of this epic back and forth, a COVID-19 deal agreed to, reached, voted on by Congress. Last night, President Trump put a video online criticizing the deal. Here's some of what he had to say.
I am asking Congress to amend this bill and increase the ridiculously low $600 to $2,000 or $4,000 for a couple. I'm also asking Congress to immediately get rid of the wasteful and unnecessary items from this legislation.
And let's bring in a caller to start our conversation about this at 800-642-1234. Bill is with us in Sun Prairie. Bill, hi.
Hi, thanks. I understand at the top of the hour news he did veto this this bill. And so the question I have is, Mnuchin sounds like he worked his butt off trying to negotiate this with Congress. And now Trump comes out with a different point of view. Wasn't Mnuchin supposed to be representing Trump's point of view in those negotiations?
Thanks for the call, Bill. And to clarify, the president vetoed the defense bill. He's, in effect, I think, threatening to veto this spending bill slash COVID relief package. And that's, Sungmin, what a lot of people have been pointing to. President Trump wasn't really at the table, but his guy was. His Treasury Secretary was involved in the negotiations and asking, why didn't this come up sooner?
Exactly. I mean, Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin was supposed to be the administration's chief emissary to the congressional leaders. And all along, every kind of move, big major move that was made regarding the stimulus legislation, whether it was the actual provisions of the COVID relief package or the decision to pair the COVID relief package with this massive government spending bill that has to pass every year to keep the government open, that was all done with the consent of and the assent of the administration via people like Steve Mnuchin. So this is clearly, you have Mitch McConnell blindsided. You have Kevin McCarthy, the House Republican leader, blindsided as well. And only a few very, very small circle of aides knew what the president was up to yesterday afternoon. Clearly, that was Steven Mnuchin was not part of this. But White House officials were telling us all day yesterday that the president was preparing to sign this bill, all the while the president was filming this remarkable video decrying this bill elsewhere in the White House. Steven Mnuchin was kind of his idea to come up with the size of the $600 stimulus checks, obviously a lower figure than the $1,200 that was in legislation earlier this year, and also obviously a lot lower than the $2,000 figure that the president is pushing for now. And our story, our reporting that just posted on the Washington Post website indicates that the president is pretty disappointed and displeased with Steve Mnuchin right now, and is not even willing to speak to him.
Talking to Sungmin Kim, White House reporter for The Washington Post, looking at some of the top stories in national politics, including the long-awaited COVID-19 relief package. Now, the president criticizing it. You can join in with your thoughts on that at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. With this 2,000 number, I mean, the president, some progressives, including here in Wisconsin, are saying, in Congress, saying, hey, we were saying 2,000 in like April and May. And just in the last few days, you had Republicans like Senator Rand Paul criticizing 600, saying, hey, if we can make up the money to do that, kind of mocking the notion that, well, why not 1,000? Why not 2,000? The president on this one item lining up with the progressive Democrats?
It's quite the odd couple pairing, as you point out. I mean, you have everyone from, Nancy Pelosi to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez endorsing this effort to enlarge it to $2,000, enlarge these stimulus checks to $2,000. And something that is, it's a move that is broadly disliked by the Republican Party, mostly because, to Republicans, we don't have a infinite amount of money to work with when it comes to relief. They wanted to keep the broader price tag of the COVID relief bill under $1 trillion. And our calculations show that if we do up these checks to $2,000 per individual from what it is right now, it will cost an extra $370 billion. Obviously, that's Democrats say the costs of adding to the deficit are far lower. It's worth, getting more relief out to people who are still suffering under the weight of the pandemic right away. But for, deficit hawks, these fiscally minded conservatives who are really worried about all the spending that is going on, and adding an extra $370 billion in a way that they don't feel is smart and targeted is really something that is not getting a lot of support or won't get a lot of support among congressional Republicans.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234 with Ed in West Allis. Ed, hello.
Well, this is just the capstone of the zaniness of Trump for 4 years, and the Republicans own him. And this is going to really play in to the 2022 election, because that area up north was represented by a liberal Republican by the name of Alvin Okonski for 36 years. And then when he left office, that was a very Democratic seat. that Mr. Tiffany represents now, that Mr. Obi held. And we think that Mr. Tiffany gave us a great opportunity to defeat him in 2022, both by the shenanigans with the election, trying to find a way to put or have Trump remain in the White House, and now with his vote against the COVID-19 package. So I think Mr. Tiffany has another 2 years, and that seat is going to revert back to the Democrats in 2022.
And thanks for the call, referring there to one of our northern Wisconsin congressional seats, Sungmin. I don't know about thinking ahead to 2022, but a lot of people are thinking ahead to the Georgia Senate runoff election just next month. What are people thinking about as they look at what's happening with this relief bill and what's going on in Georgia?
Well, what people are thinking right now, both Democrats and Republicans who are desperately trying to hold on to those two seats, is that President Trump, with one swift move, with that one video, really undercut the two Republicans who are running for re-election or election outright to those seats, because Senate Republicans were motivated to put these $600 stimulus checks in part because, you know, David Perdue and Kelly Loeffler, the Republican candidates in Georgia, were coming under a lot of pressure from their Democratic challengers to provide more generous aid for Georgians and Americans throughout this crisis. So they are, and Senators Loeffler and Perdue proudly touted the bill that passed the Congress, you know, very late Monday night, and said, you know, we worked hard to get these $600 checks in there. And with one fell swoop, the president undercut them and said, this is not enough. I want $2,000. And that just gave the Democratic candidates in the race, John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock, another thing to latch on, saying Donald Trump is right on this one. Why won't you get on board directing that to Senators Perdue and Loeffler? So it's really, I mean, we've seen so much of a Republican divide in Georgia as the two Senate runoffs commence, whether it's over the president's baseless allegations of voting fraud and election fraud, or on this issue of the stimulus checks. And the Republican Party in disarray is certainly not going to help the Republican Party heading into the January 5th runoffs.
It's a week in Washington. We're talking to Sungmin Kim, White House reporter for The Washington Post. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Your thoughts on the president's last-minute call for changes on this COVID-19 relief bill and the overall spending bill, and his efforts to still overturn the results of the election. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our talk now with Sungmin Kim, White House reporter at The Washington Post, looking at some of the top political stories of the week. Let's go back to another caller on the COVID-19 economic relief package and the White House last-minute call for changes. Ryan is with us in Superior. Ryan, hi.
Hi.
Hey. What'd you want to bring up, Ryan?
Okay, I'll try and make this as quick as possible. First of all, I'm also from Tom Tiffany's area, from what the previous caller mentioned. I'll be glad when that guy is out of office. Anyways, as for the subject in hand, Trump, this is the one thing that Trump has said, which I think that we could all get behind. Even Pelosi has said that we could use larger checks for all Americans. And if the Democrats push real hard on this right now, we could actually get that done. We can unend like what the Republican establishment has laid forth with their plans, thanks to Trump's really insane rogue decision right here. We can actually get that done and get more help to the American people straight out if all the Democrats would unite together, stand with Trump on this one particular subject of bigger checks, and get this done.
Ryan, thanks for the call. Sungmin, I mean, does it look like members of Congress are going to vote on this change from $600 to $2,000 checks?
Well, I would keep an eye on C-SPAN tomorrow morning at about 9 a.m. Eastern time, when House Democrats are going to attempt to pass legislation that would increase the amount of that would increase the amount of checks to $2,000 by doing it basically unilaterally. Now, there's a couple of procedural, shenanigans that you would have to go through there. But this tactic is really meant on the part of Nancy Pelosi and our House Democrats to put Republicans in a tough position to, basically make them, force them to reject a demand that is being made by the president of their own party, both in the House and the Senate. You can pass things by unanimous consent, but as the name implies, it does have to be unanimous. So one person, one side can object to, as someone trying to pass legislation unilaterally. So there's certainly going to be a showdown tomorrow morning. It's going to be largely for show. I mean, we don't actually expect the House of Representatives to unanimously clear legislation that would boost the amount of checks to $2,000. But it clearly is going to be an uncomfortable moment for Republicans tomorrow morning.
Thanks for the call. We'll go to Laura in Madison now. Laura, hi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. Carrying through with what the comment was just made, I think it's an uncomfortable moment for everyone in our government. Decisions are being made about us in our home that continues to have that political underwriting. If the truth be known, $600 a family, we don't have the money in the government. We've just simply arbitrarily stated we're going to do it. And I'm okay with that. However, buried in this, and not so buried, because I can read it, you can read it, money is going to many special interest groups going outside of our country, going to situations that have nothing to do with COVID relief, and yet the bill is called COVID relief.
Laura, thanks a lot for the call. And Sungmin, one thing that makes it a little muddier is there's two things going on here, the spending bill and the COVID-19 package. Some things having nothing to do with COVID are, I think, in the COVID bill. A lot of those in the overall spending bill, too, though, right?
Right. And that's actually the confusion that's happening here, because if you listen to all the criticisms that the president laid out in his remarkable video last night, and as your caller laid out, the designated foreign aid abroad, that is technically not part of the COVID relief package. It is part of the annual government spending bill that, again, like we discussed earlier, passes every year, keeps, all 12 of the major federal departments and federal agencies running. Obviously, one of those is the State Department, and part of that is just this annual amount of foreign aid that the State Department doles out to various countries that the United States has deemed in need of foreign aid from the United States, the richest country in the world. And just to make it easier on Republicans and also on lawmakers, and also just because we don't have a lot of time before the holidays, both the administration and congressional leaders agreed to basically make that one big massive package. So you have the government spending bill on one side and the COVID relief package with the stimulus checks, with the extension on moratoriums for evictions, with the expanded unemployment benefits, all that in that COVID relief package. That was paired together in just kind of this one big mega package. So the president is really, intentionally or not, is conflating the two things here. The parts that he laid out weren't part of the COVID relief package. And also, it was actually incidentally the amount of the, for example, the foreign aid that the Congress had designated was precisely the amount requested by his own administration in their budget requests earlier this year. So they're not doing anything kind of sneaky or nefarious or new. This is just all part of the process and also part of something that his own administration recommended.
Thanks for that call. And Sungmin, I want to spend our last few minutes on another story. You're covering difficulties facing Republicans as President Trump keeps trying to overturn the election results, and they're figuring out when and if they can move along. What are you seeing?
So right now we're seeing a Republican Party that's kind of in open warfare over the president's refusal to accept the fact that he lost and that Joe Biden is the president-elect. Obviously, after the Electoral College certification last week, you had very senior Republican officials, including Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, say that the Biden is the rightful winner of the November 3rd elections. But you see this increasing effort led by House conservatives to contest the results on the House floor on January 6th. I mean, this is a process that happens every 4 years. The Congress meets in a joint session, both House and the Senate, to essentially certify what the Electoral College has done. And there is a process in place to object to those results. Now, obviously, those objections will fail because Democrats clearly have accepted the fact that Joe Biden won the presidency, and as have a lot of Republicans. And, you know, even if they're not happy about it, they respect the process and they respect the will of the voters. But, you know, a growing number of House conservatives are latching on to this, to the baseless claims that the president has floated that this election was rigged and that, you know, the results must be overturned. The president is kind of egging on this effort. Mitch McConnell and his top deputies are shooting it down, saying this is an effort that we just cannot do. We have to respect what the Electoral College and what the voters decided. And that, in turn, is making President Trump very angry. You know, he sent around an email blasting McConnell and his, you know, and basically taking credit for McConnell's own political standing in Kentucky. And he threatened a primary challenge to Senator John Thune, who of South Dakota, who is the second ranking Republican, so the second most powerful Republican leader after Mitch McConnell. So you do see a party that is just, again, kind of in open warfare right now, and all because the president of the United States cannot accept the fact that he lost.
We'll leave it there. Sungmin, thanks for joining us again today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Sungmin Kim is a White House reporter at The Washington Post. She joined us today to talk about some of the top stories in politics this week, including President Trump calling for Congress to amend the COVID-19 relief bill it passed earlier this week. COVID-19 almost killed Kathy Melky. The Peshtigo mayor spent months in the hospital this summer and fall, and she's still in her recovery, the early stages from the disease. But Mayor Melky made it home. She's sharing her story because she wants people to understand how serious the disease can be. Rob Mentzer has more.
Kathy Malky has a lot of energy.
I'm like a goer from morning till night.
Kathy drives an ambulance and is an EMT in northeastern Wisconsin. At 63, she's in her third term as mayor of Peshtigo. She's the first woman to be mayor there. In July, when she got sick with COVID-19, her first symptom was fatigue. She slept until noon one day. That alone was alarming.
And that's when my husband, Carl, came in and he said, you know, if you're not going to get up, I'm calling 911 and they're going to come get you.
So she got up, but she was so weak that she fell down on her way to the bathroom. Carl drove her to the hospital. That was July 17th. She wouldn't come home until November. Kathy spent the first few weeks of her treatment at Aurora Medical Center, Bay Area, in Marinette.
Every day it was getting worse. They just couldn't get it under control at first.
The disease worked on her lungs. She would gasp for breath.
You know, you feel like you're drowning without air.
Kathy has no idea where she contracted the virus. In early July, Marinette County was averaging only 8 or 10 new infections per day. Kathy wore a mask and reminded others to wear one, but she also interacted with a lot of people for both of her jobs. Carla Noel is a nurse in the intensive care unit at Aurora Bayview.
She was very sick. Kathy was a good patient. A lot of these patients, they're just so sick. And Kathy especially, she's a healthcare provider also. She drives the ambulance, works with rescue squads. And so you take somebody that's used to being able to do everything for themselves, and they're put in a position very quickly and very rapidly realize how sick they are.
In the months that followed, the burden on that hospital and others across Wisconsin would get much, much worse. By November, Noelle was working 12-hour shifts 5 days a week. But even in the summer, working in the COVID unit was intense. Noelle has seen a lot of patients in Kathy's situation. Some of them didn't make it. Noelle cared for Kathy every day.
These patients become like family to us. Their family's not there. We're taking care of them, not for 2 days because they came in with something and we got them better and they're out right away. A lot of these patients we're seeing for 3 and 4 and 5 weeks at a time.
Kathy had been in the hospital for 3 weeks. Her oxygen levels were in free fall. All around her, things started to move quickly. There was one bed left in the critical care unit in Green Bay. Kathy needed to go right away. And, she says, doctors told her she'd need to be put on a ventilator.
My husband was allowed in by me for a minute, seconds actually. And
you know, I could say something to him that for 10 seconds, and then I was going to be under. So, I mean, it's hard to even think of what are you going to say to him? Just that I loved him, because that might be the last words I ever said to him.
Kathy could have died that night, and she knew it.
Now I'm going to start to cry because at that point, I want people to know this. I asked God to take me because I couldn't handle it. You know, you couldn't breathe. Everybody said, oh, you were so strong. I wasn't. There was times where I was ready to go.
One of Kathy's best friends, a fellow paramedic, drove her in the ambulance to Green Bay. Carl remembers the night they put Kathy on the ventilator. He didn't know if she'd make it.
She was asleep from that day. For 9 days, they had her completely knocked out or paralyzed.
In August, the Marinette Eagle Herald ran a story about the fact that Kathy had been hospitalized. A Peshtigo city council member said there were rumors that she had COVID-19, but those rumors were, quote, not fair to her. But Peshtigo is a small town. Carl says his neighbors and friends knew a lot more. They left food at his house. They showed that they cared.
The people in this town, they were praying. They had, no matter where you'd go, somebody would say, how's Kathy? You know, it was just, you can't believe how people tried to help.
Carl and Kathy have been married for 42 years. He told his son he couldn't imagine losing her.
I felt very helpless. I mean, my boy was here, we'd hug. And I said, I don't think Mom's coming home.
Kathy spent weeks in the hospital lying on her stomach, an awful, uncomfortable pose that is sometimes the only way to keep patients' oxygen levels up. She had so many tubes and devices attached to her that it took 5 or 6 nurses just to situate her. But slowly, she got better. In September, she left the hospital and entered a rehabilitation center in Peshtigo. Her friends and coworkers had arranged a surprise for her.
We reached the city limits. Fire trucks, EMS, the hospital. They just did like a big parade of vehicles for me.
Carl never missed a day visiting her through the window at the rehab center. Kathy had lost so much muscle that she couldn't walk. She still gets winded at times and has to sit down. But she's incredibly grateful to be home. On a mild day, she can sit on her porch and watch the geese on the Peshtigo River. And she's spending the holidays with her family. Rob Menser, Wisconsin Public Radio.
You can find more of Wisconsin Public Radio's coverage of the COVID-19 pandemic at WPR.org. Maybe you've experienced this before. You have a few days off from work that you're looking forward to, but then just like that, you're back at work and feel like you never left. Our next guest says we need to set aside some time to deal with stress, but your method of doing that can be unique to you and your interests and your schedule. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have trouble relaxing or distancing yourself from work when you do have time off? And have you found your own personal form of escape or stress relief in these past months? Listening to music, putting your phone in another room and reading, doing some kind of outdoor activity? Tell us about it. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Marcellus Merritt is an associate professor of health psychology at UW-Milwaukee. His research focuses on stress physiology and finding solutions for cardiovascular health disparities. Marcellus, thanks a lot for joining us.
Okay, thank you for having me, Rob.
Well, before we get into some specific ideas for people, let's talk about what's at stake here. What happens with our health if we don't find ways to deal with stress in our lives?
Well, I'd start off by just noting that stress is endemic in our everyday life. So in other words, you can't live life without stress. So it's kind of a contradiction in a way, where essentially you can't get up tomorrow morning and say, well, okay, today I'm not gonna deal with stress at all. So in a sense, it's kind of a non sequitur in a way. So, but to kind of answer your question a little more directly, my best advice is to find things that work best for you. So we know that there are, you know, very standard ways of kind of helping people deal with the stresses and strains in their life. There's kind of clinical interventions, cognitive behavioral therapies, and the like. But for me, it's really kind of more of a preventive model in terms of finding things or ways to deal with this stuff as it happens in the moment in a way.
Yeah, we see sometimes things, Marcellus, an article that says, oh, meditation, that's the surefire cure for stress, or this yeah. or that. And what I'm hearing you say is it is not one size fits all. The same thing that might work for you might not work for me. Do I have that right?
And I would supplement, that's a wonderful observation. And I would just supplement that observation by just noting that at the end of the day, and this is kind of our theory for our research group, that what works for you may be something that you already are doing and have been doing for most of your life. So we have this term referred to as rehearsed relaxation, which is just the basic premise of saying that whatever works well to relax you will help you manage your chronic stress in a way. So as you kind of rehearse this activity and do it over and over again, your stress levels, whether they be mental, physical, or emotional, are going to drop or wane in a theory. So with that said, we really focus on this concept of leisure. And I'll ask you, or I'll kind of use you as kind of a test sure. subject, Rob. What's the thing that you like to do to kind of get away from yourself and get away from all of the, you know, madness and craziness in your life?
Well, I've been thinking about this, and I've got a couple, you know, just sitting down and reading a book, you know, and really, you know, reading, not just, you know, for a few minutes, sure. or playing a musical instrument, you know, the saxophone or the piano. Those, I know when I'm doing those more, I feel better about my stress.
Okay. Then the next logical question is, why do those activities work for you? What psychological, social aspects of those activities make you feel better or make you sleep better or reduce your heart rate, if you will?
Well, I guess for one thing, you got to focus on it, right? Like you can't be thinking yeah. about all the other stuff while you're doing yeah. that kind of activity is what I would say. And, you know, and they're things that I've loved. I've been doing for decades. So they're, you know, I've got a lot of good associations with those activities.
Right. So those activities are what we as scientists would refer to as your self-selected leisure activities that we kind of playfully refer to as your SSLAs. Anyway. So they're your activities that you do that are inherently enjoyable, that are your thing in a way. So that essentially that we as psychologists or interventionists don't have to come in and like teach you a whole new activity to learn. So we don't have to have you do cognitive behavioral worksheets and interventions or systematic desensitization where you kind of give you these trials of different access to different threatening things like snakes or worms or that kind of thing. If you like to play your musical instrument, you're going to do it, and you're going to do it without being pushed or challenged. Same thing with your reading as well too. So what we do to take advantage of that is that we're assessing those activities and we hypothesize or are guessing that it's not necessarily that you do those activities, but it's how you do them. And the real question is, do you do them as optimally as you could in a way? So that requires us to kind of look at certain kinds of psychosocial features or elements of those activities, whether they be, you talked about attention or focus, absorption, mental absorption, mood, social reinforcement, if you're doing something that's like a group activity in a way here. So there's different features that we want to tap to figure out if doing your activity where you optimize those features more will help you get more mental and physical health benefit out of those activities in a way. So let me give you an example mm-hmm. that I think hits home, and I think will hit home for a lot of your readers here. It's more of a personal motivation for why I'm doing this kind of assessment. My father, Charles Merritt, who passed along about 6 years ago, spent most of his adult life working as a supervisor in factories in rural North Carolina. So you can imagine when he got home every evening that he was kind of worn out mentally and emotionally because he had to manage like 30 to 40 crews of 30 to 40 people each day. So he's very stressed, and he obviously, when he got home, he wanted to do something, get away from all that, you know, strain and conflict and everything. So what he'd do is in our basement of our home, he would set up his stereo system to listen to classic jazz for, say, 60 to 75 minutes every evening. So he would listen to his Thelonious Monk or his Charles Mingus or his Dave Brubeck. And that would kind of get him into another state or another, what we like to refer to as a flow state, where essentially we're kind of out of ourselves. We're no longer in that automated kind of unconscious, emotionless reality anymore. We're kind of like floating. We're almost like we're on a vacation, except we're actually not doing a vacation physically. So in that regard, he was mentally absorbed and distracted in his activity to the point where he could then adjust physiologically and mentally and let his battery recharge through the rest of the evening and overnight and get a better night of sleep and feel refreshed in the morning and ready to go back to work and do this whole thing over and over again. So that's a lot of kind of what we're talking about with our leisure model.
We're talking to Marcellus Merritt, health psychologist at UW-Milwaukee, associate professor there, talking about how to find stress relief, not one size fits all, finding that thing that you might already know about and make sure that you, A, do it, and B, do it effectively. If you have that thing, that hobby, maybe that activity that calms you down, that you make time for, let us know. 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Okay, here's my problem, Marcellus. I know what my things are, but I do them, you know, when I have time for them. And some days I didn't end up having time for them, or I go a few days without doing them. How can we make sure that we prioritize those things that are going to relieve our stress?
That's a great question. And we know that based on our, we have basically two daily rhythms. We have a circadian rhythm, which is a big word for a biological rhythm. It just basically means that some people like to sleep at night, other people like to sleep during the day, and so forth. There are some people more active in the morning, or some people more active in the evening, that kind of thing. Then we have what's referred to as social rhythms, which is just based on the premise that we like to do the things we enjoy socially or leisure-wise at certain times or certain days of the week. So one element that we're thinking about in our research model, and one element that I would recommend to you, Rob, is maybe to come up with a schedule of kind of when you do your activity and when that activity is most optimal for you. So if you like to play your music in the evening and that's kind of when you get the most out of it, then I would try to arrange your schedule around that calendar, if you will, and to optimize that way theory. So if you can't, or if you feel like you're constricted, then we're doing some preliminary research. We're actually going to try to assess how kind of playing around or manipulating with the activity and how you do the activity changes when you kind of do it at different dates or different times, or that kind of focus as well too. So we think there is an additive benefit. So if you like to do both of the activities that you've noted here, we think that's actually going to be a bonus. So getting more bang for your buck out of reading and music playing rather than simply just doing one or the other. So
interesting. Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. We've got Barb with us in Wisconsin Rapids. Barb, hello.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
What did you want to tell us about, Barb?
I was just listening to the show here, and it's such a great topic, and I'm noticing that things that I normally get a lot of joy from just are kind of not doing it for me during this era of COVID. Maybe I've done them, you know, over and over, and it just seems like it's not giving me the same bang for my buck, I guess, as they used to. Is there a way to assess what activities might be better for, like, my brain chemistry, or just doing better things for me at this time?
And before Marcellus answers, Barb, can I ask, what are your usual go-to stress-relieving activities?
Generally, reading, cooking, taking a walk, hiking, those kinds of things. So just a variety, I guess.
Interesting, Barb. So yeah, Marcellus, I think a lot of us have that situation where our usual stress relievers are being put to the test in 2020. How can we, Barb and me and a lot of people, evaluate why those things aren't working and what we can do?
Two things. Thanks for the call, Barb. Again, based on my point about the biological rhythm, I'll first of all assess whether or not your biological rhythm has been kind of altered. Because we know, and I know for myself, that my sleep rhythm during this year has been almost completely knocked off track. So I'm like two or 2 hours off where I'm normally at. So that's in turn has challenged my ability to do things I like to do in the schedule that I would like to do them. So I would first look at your biological rhythm. And Barb, you brought up brain chemistry, which I find very intriguing because we know that there are certain parts of the brain, and my neuroscience colleagues can kind of feel in on this a little bit later, but there are certain parts of the brain that are kind of activated when you do things that are rewarding to you in a way here. So, but my general advice kind of at this point is kind of more intuitive is kind of just to look at your schedule, maybe do what I'd refer to as a reset, where you just sit down and you kind of think to yourself, okay, let's just reset the schedule. Instead of doing this activity that I usually do in the morning, let's see if I can reset it in the evening and do my activity in the morning instead of the evening and see if that helps you kind of get on track, kind of like you do when you kind of recharge your battery in your car in a way.
Interesting. Hope that helps. Let's go to Andy now in Brookfield. Andy, hello.
Hello. Hello. Thank you for taking the call. I'm a professor and I do a lot of reading, but for relaxation purposes, I put on a little soft classical music and I buy a book, but I also purchase the audio book. So I sit back and I let either the author or the audio CD just play and kind of just enjoy the book, maybe follow along a little bit, if not just listen to it. And it gives me immense relaxation.
I love it, Andy. That he's got that full audiovisual experience with the book there, Marcel. It's very absorbing, it sounds like.
That is apropos, and thank you for the call, in that we know in today's world with technology that essentially one way to kind of optimize your activity is to let the technology do some of the work for you. So in terms of like music listening or interacting with different kinds of technology, the audiobooks are great because that way, you know, not only do you kind of, is it kind of physically easier to kind of listen, but from a mental kind of cognitive standpoint, you don't have to do as much work to kind of go through the pages or kind of do highlighting or some of those other kind of superficial motor-based activities that you have to do when you interact with text or reading material in a way. So part of our research plan is to kind of figure out solutions like that in terms of, in this case, because we know, for example, with classical music, just very briefly, that the type of music that's most relaxing, produces the most relaxed physiological response is classical music. So if you want to relax your heart rate or kind of get those cortisol or brain activities levels down, maybe listen to a few selections of Tchaikovsky or that kind of thing as well. So I really like that example because it really hits home about how you can do the things you like to do better so that you can optimize your relaxation.
Thanks a lot for that call. And Marcellus, that's all the time we have. Thank you so much for sharing this with us today.
Thank you. Have a good one.
You too. That's Marcellus Merritt, Associate Professor of Health Psychology at UW-Milwaukee. His research focuses on stress physiology and finding solutions for cardiovascular health disparities. He's been telling us, giving us some of his research on how to figure out how to relax and de-stress most effectively. We've got a link, by the way, to some stress relief resources over at WPR.org/Central Time if you'd like to learn more. Maybe try some of this at home. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, Charles Schulz was a longtime presence on the comics page with Charlie Brown, Snoopy, and the rest of the Peanuts gang. We'll talk to the author of a book that explores Schulz's influence on cartoonists, writers, and the rest of us. Milwaukee, Waukesha, Wauwatosa, many Wisconsin place names have the W-A-U syllable. Two experts on native languages of Wisconsin answer a Wisconsin question, or Wisconsin question, about the Waw sound, and their answers may surprise you. Plus, a holiday special from our friends and colleagues at Chapter a Day featuring Wisconsin high school students reading from a bunch of different books. That's coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.